Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, the podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm here for part two of a conversation with Cindy McEnroy, who is a speech and language therapist and expert in early childhood language development and former colleague of mine. I've known her for 30 years. We worked together at Fraser years ago and had so much fun in that work. We were both like soaking things up as sponges, and I learned so much from her through her being my colleague because of her expertise. And we've already talked about infants and their development, Cindy. So welcome back. We're going to talk today about toddlers and what we need to know about them.
Yep. And we'll talk about maybe toddlers and then maybe all the way up to 4 years oldish.
Great.
To kind of close out the, because this is when now that language starts to kind of like clip along and really grow that like literally in 1 month's time passing, your child can be such a different communicator.
Yeah. It's amazing. What a happy time and a fun time for that child. I just love to see the joy when a child figures out how to truly communicate their needs using words and seeing how that changes the world around them and can really give them so much powerful control to things.
Right. It is a lot about control and about us helping to kind of like guide them into finding the words to make their needs met. And also knowing that still a lot of the times we have to be that kind of external voice and helping to like narrate or to helping clarify what things are, because they're just trying to figure out how language works.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. Like you said, I've done this for over 30 years and I am still truly amazed at it's amazing they learn how to walk, right, but it's really, really amazing that they figure out how to make a lung get air, a voice box to turn on or off, depending on the sound, coordinate a jaw and tongue and lips and everything to just anatomically come together, yeah, at the same time as a brain is sending down a word and produce it.
Wow.
So truly, it's why I'm a speech therapist, because truly the fact that they learn to talk is indeed a miracle.
Truly, yeah.
It's amazing how much coordinated stuff it takes to communicate.
That is such a great reminder to all of us, I think, as we become frustrated because someone's not able to use their words and they might cry or whine or throw themselves on the floor because it is so hard. And
it is very hard.
Be patient with that process.
Totally. It takes a lot of patience, and a lot of trying to, and I know in working with you, I learned so much too, in that we sometimes have to give them the words.
Yes.
So I'm like, your face is showing me it's really sad. I think what you're trying to tell me is you wanted to have snack right now, but I'm sorry, that is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them, talking through that.
Right.
Your body's showing me it's kind of angry right now because we can't go outside. Let's have some choices for something else.
Yeah.
We can do this or this.
Yeah. And so as you think about this age group, what are some things that really our listeners should know about the progression of development? And what are, those types of things, and then infused in there, what we can do as that caregiver and guide through this process.
Yeah. So when they start out, like 1.5 year olds, 18 months old. So the general guideline, I think when you look at developmental milestones, it'll usually say like first words by 12 months. And that is usually majority of kids will have like the word mama or dada. They'll have a few words at 12 months. Some kids do not have first words though until like 18 months or closer to 21 months. And especially kids who are really big motor kids, kids who are moving around all over, they tend to be later talkers. And that's totally neurologically wired. The right side of your brain controls physical movement. The left side of your brain is where speech is. Until a child is 3 years old, only one part of their brain can grow at a time. So children literally cannot chew gum, walk, and talk at the same time. So what happens is that I'm a super motor motivated, and this tends to be what people think of as little boys, but it's really more just the kind of learner, because I've seen just as many late talking girls, kids who are super motivated. They're the early walkers, or even if they're the regular walkers on time, they're the kids that go straight from crawling to walking to running to climbing. Mm-hmm. And they're just all about motor. They are see it, do it. Their eyes lead them to go learn, find, hands on, figure out how to do it. Here at Do It's tend to be late walkers. Their gross motor stuff sometimes is late, but they tend to be on mark or early talkers. And that's because learning how to talk is a hear it, do it. I have to, if we could build words, our see it, do it kids could do it too.
Sure.
So it kind of depends on where they land. But by 18 months, kids should have a solid, you know, 3 to 5 labeling kind of words. Mama, dada, milk, juice, puppy, book, car, toys that are favorites, mm-hmm. Foods that are favorites, things that they have a lot of experience with. They should be also consistently imitating words after an adult. So when you say banana, they say nana, or they say that simple word approximation to it. It shouldn't sound perfect, but it should sound close to the word. Important is that we all love our children. They're all geniuses. So obviously sometimes parents are like, oh yeah, they've got 20 words. Knowing that, is it really a word or is it a consonant vowel approximation to a word? For a lot of things. So like ba for ball, ba for banana, ba for bed, ba for book. Oh, nope. That would be, I have a consonant vowel syllable approximation to a lot of words.
Okay.
So knowing that, does it sound close to that target?
Yeah.
The consonants don't need to be perfect. We'll talk about articulation later, but so it sounds sort of like the thing you imitated. Then as they get to about 2 years old, they should be able to now, they should be reliably pointing at an object picture in a book. When you ask them, show me a ball, where's a shoe, where's a boot? So a picture representation of an object, recognizing an object at like 12, 15 months or 15 months. But now at 2, I should be able to find it in a picture. And then also at 2 is when they should start now be kind of combining 2 word phrases. More juice, daddy bye, mama up, baby sleep. So those simple action words, ing verbs come later, but those simple like go, mine, it sometimes starts at 2, or my. A lot of times it's the grammatical error is okay, it's there. So they're like, mine baby,
yeah.
You know. So 2 word kind of combinations, and that they're trying to, then still, they're still imitating you. They're still trying to expand. In the previous podcast, we talked a little bit about jargon. So the dibbigabedigibba.
Yeah.
That can continue on up until about 2, where it's jargoning with true words in it, because their brain is hearing conversation, and that is their conversation. So and so they throw in these true words in the middle of their jargon.
Okay.
And they're conversing. That's the only way they can do it.
Yeah.
They don't have all those other words to fill in quite yet. So then just kind of keeps emerging and it moves on. Kids around the age of 2 should be able to, and probably can also label a few, but at least be able to point to body parts and clothing when you ask the major body parts, eyes, nose, mouth, ears. When you say, touch your nose, where's your nose? They will usually and oftentimes do that better on someone else or on a doll than on themselves, because to see it and point to it is much easier.
Sure.
Than away versus finding it on me. And they all confuse eyes and ears. Always.
So where's your ear? Calm down, listeners.
Yeah, eyes and ears. We don't think those words sound that much alike, but to a small toddler, they do. So tummies, bellies, whatever you call your tummy, mm-hmm. that also is one that they will find. Minor body parts, that's not until closer to like 4. Neck, chin, elbow, knee. So yes, will they learn to do heads, shoulders, knees, and toes? Yes. Do they know the body parts? Probably only head, because they've learned it by the imitation of the motor memory of doing it from the song.
True.
Finding them in isolation, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So when you think about, you know, once again, adults in the world of these toddlers and young preschoolers, are we worried about perfection? I know you're going to talk about articulation later on in one of our next episodes mm-hmm. too, but what, you know, sometimes I think that adults get so caught up in the right way to say it that in some cases, does that then make a child feel unsure about speaking and kind of scared to talk if they're always corrected? Or what do you tell families when you're working with someone who's got these emergent skills and that adult is trying for perfect?
So what I always say is that, and I talked about it in the last one, and it's pretty much through the lifespan, is that you're always narrating, you're always talking. So when you're talking, you're giving them the adult version, that true matured language version of doing something. It is okay, though, to simplify it to their language. So I might go, look, this boy is swimming. He's swimming in a pool. Boy swimming, swimming pool. And then because they now have heard that ing, or I might just even go boy swim, swim water, because they have now heard the model. It's all about the receptive language growing first. What I understand, yes. I store first. The expressive language comes later. And I figure out how to take what I know in my head and say it out loud. That develops after I know it, after I know what in means before I say put it in or can whatever. I can follow it before I say it. Pronouns are a classic. Where's your shoe? But then what is that? A lot of times they'll be like, your shoe, me, mine, you, yours, super hard. Because when you try to explain it to them, the pronouns get all confusing even to us as we're trying to describe it.
Yeah.
So use the adult, use the mature language form, but then break it down into whatever stage your child is at. Because you are teaching them what it will become when they're ready to get there, but you're giving them the words at the level they can use now.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful reminder. Yeah, that's great. So, and then also I think you maybe touched a little bit about grammar and looking at that piece of it as well and expectations.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And that's what, so like word order. So what happens is that kids, so the first pronouns we learn are I, me, mine, you, your. Those are the first ones we understand, first one we learn. It's not until into like that four-year-old age that they understand, going into fours, that they understand he, him, so gender marker pronouns, he, him, they, them, theirs, and then use them accurately when they're describing things. Mm-hmm. That's like a four-year-old kind of a skill. Okay. Kids oftentimes mix gender. And I as a speech therapist, I do not write pronoun kind of goals. And when I try to test kids now, I try to be aware of gender diversity and gender awareness. And so when I give directions, I'm like, show me the child rather than show me the boy or hear him. I mean, I still do it, but that's up to each family, because if you have people who use they, them plurals, that's important. That's their identity. And so teaching children how to use that. And I think that in this next generation of kids who are coming up, it's just going to be a part of their vernacular that just rolls off their tongue. It won't matter so much. So because it is a normal and natural thing for kids to confuse pronouns anyway.
Right.
So then what I do is as they get towards kindergarten, I'm like, oh, that person identifies as a girl. They think of themselves as a girl. Mm-hmm. She has a puppy. Mm-hmm. And I just model it that way. And that just helps with it. And we're just making them, because our statistics, our data shows that, and it is something we work on, people are like, yeah, but they're only in preschool, that kids who have a different internal gender identity than what they externally present, that they know that at the age of five. I have 4-year-olds who identify as being other and using other names, who have wanted to change their names from their name at birth because they are like, because I'm not that name. And they know, and they solidly know at 4 and 5 years old who they are.
Interesting.
And that's only just kudos to the environment, the educational world, and who we are, that we're going to let kids be kids because that's what's important. And give them the words around it. So that's what we do. So the grammar part of that, verbs started as simple verbs, go. Then they learn ing verbs, the action verbs of swimming, whatever. ED verbs, past tense. That's like a 4-year-old thing. It's cute. Every kid said, I goaded every kid in the world. I goaded to the zoo yesterday. Yes. That too, time and tense marker. That is, again, four-year-old is when a lot of it all like comes together. Three-year-olds are really good about just three-word sentences, factual, in the now, things that are happening right now. Three-year-olds also are best at, when you give them like first then directions, but testing out on them before we go to the store, you need to pick up your toys. Knowing that when kids are little, in that receptive language thing, that they're still sometimes in that stage of what I hear first, I do first, and what I hear second, I do second. Yeah. So when we say before you can watch a movie, you need to pick up your toys, and they go over and they sit in front of the TV, and then we say it to them again, no, before you can watch a movie, and they're like, I am, you told me watch movie, pick up toys.
Yeah.
And so then you have to catch yourself and go, wait, oh no, first you have to pick up your toys, then we will watch the movie.
Yeah.
And then say it again. So before we watch the movie, we're going to pick up toys. That's how they learn the language. So you don't have to be a constant monitor of your words. But when you start to see that behavior start to change, or a breakdown in what it was you said and they didn't seem to want to follow through on, think of how you said it.
Yeah.
Because it might need just some rewording or a different kind of a prompt. So it's not a denial. They're just doing it exactly the way their brain interprets it.
I have a great story of that. So I was coaching in a setting, and it was after lunchtime, and the teacher said to a group of four-year-olds, and I was there to observe and support a little guy who was having some processing with, you know, the receptive incoming information. And the teacher said, okay, clean up your lunch, throw away your garbage, put your lunchbox in your cubbies, and go in the bathroom and wash your hands. And so this little guy ended up standing in the bathroom holding his lunchbox. And that was one of those opportunities, exactly what you're describing, to go, okay, so that's what his brain heard. Those are the words that he connected. And so he's following directions based on what his brain can handle right now in that moment. And so working with that educator to say, let's break things up into a few shorter steps that he can achieve, because he was having challenges following all that. That was a lot.
It was, I was like, yeah, you lost me at step three. obviously I work at preschool with preschoolers. Cause I was like, whoa, I got lost between lunchbox and bathroom. So, and I think too, giving kids visuals, we talk a lot about with our kids who have language needs, giving them visual supports, but we can do that with all of our kids. And especially, and as I mean, we do it as adults, especially people who are, you know, kind of more see it, do it learners. They last time make lists, but if I'm a hear it, do it learner, I have to like I literally just yesterday, I walked in the store and I was like, milk, pasta, cannoli filling, you know, and it's like, and I have to say it over and over to myself as I'm going in to remember. So it's the same thing, is that taking, and when I tell kids multiple step directions, I point it out on my fingers. Number one, we're helping them learn the ordinal attachment of one, two, and three also can be first, then last, or first, second, last. So you're helping giving a visual to something that's a language concept that is really kind of obscure, like how the number one becomes the first thing or second and third.
Yeah.
Like, and then they start calling us that by grades or where we are in line.
Yeah.
It's very obscure, and it's obscure concepts they know by the time they are 5 years old. And so what I do is I'm like, first, we're going to put the toys in the basket. Second, next, we're going to go to the kitchen and pick out snack. Then we will be able to play outside, and point it on my fingers, just like there's little flags on there. And then if they get lost on the way, then I go, can you remember what this one was? And I point to like my second picture. You did a great job. You put the toys in the basket. What are we doing now? And giving them that slowed down voice, that's calm, that, because whenever we're under stress, or someone, we feel like we're under stress, then our brain can't remember what it was supposed to do. And we get just even more, you know, then we get the whole fight or flight thing come in.
Yes.
And then you got people crying and having breakdowns or running away.
Yeah.
So calming it down, taking a deep breath. Let's put on our thinking brain. Can remember what we do next? Do you think it's the kitchen, or is it something here in the living room? And they pause, and if there's no answer, I think it's the kitchen. Let's go pick out snack. Then we're going to go outside. So you're helping them learn and pace it out and fill in the blanks.
Yes. and the observer as that adult to really, we can in that moment slow things down and help mm-hmm. get to the bottom of what the issue is. And it's our job because we are there to really support and foster that learning and that growth.
Yeah. And then it's really nice is that I always warn or give warning to people so that 3-year-olds are doing 3-year-old sentences, 4-year-olds forward sentences. Or now a 4-year-old can have a full on conversation. They can ask, you know, they're following what questions, they're answering where questions. Why is kind of like a 4-year-old kind of a thing easier as a simple problem solving question. What do I do when your hands are dirty? What you would do about that? Why 4-year-olds ask why all the time.
Yeah.
And that's because they're trying. 2-year-olds are all about me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in your podcast, other people said everything and a 2-year-old, if you have it, it's mine. Yes. If I have it, it's mine. If I want it, it's mine. If it's even a remote interest, of course it's mine.
Of course.
So they're all internal and their language is internal. That's what it's all about. Label, 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 and little sentences. 3-year-olds start to figure out they still want a lot of structure, but they want to have controls. I think 3-year-olds are way harder than 2-year-olds because 3-year-olds know you're trying to distract them.
Yes.
So 3-year-olds work really well with choices. Mm-hmm. You can have the train or the block. They also work really well with peers on trading. Mm-hmm. They still are kind of in that mindset, hey, let's trade. Yep. So instead of sharing, is that trading?
Yep.
And then talking about, because sharing is kind of a hard concept, but trading is very concrete. Mm-hmm. Putting timelines around things. You can, let's do it 2 more times and then we're going to do something new. So 3-year-olds, they still need the control, you're the controls around them, but you're using your language and accepting their language to be able to manage the control. So they get choices. They think they're in control because they got the choice.
Right.
You're actually in control because you made the option for what the options
yes.
would be.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to accept their no. If you ask a kid, do you want to go to the bathroom? And they say
yeah,
no.
Right.
You gave, so I'm like, avoid at all costs, yes, no questions, unless you are really prepared to follow through with the no. Because otherwise we're not developing what trust and what language gives for me. Labeling emotions because they really don't. 3-year-olds know mad, happy, sad. That's it. That's what they know.
Yeah.
And everything falls in those 3 terms. So giving them language for the other stuff, but don't expect them to say it. I love when 3-year-olds say I'm frustrated. I'm like, I'm sure you are, but do you know what that really is? I'm like, we're still going to help you with that.
Yep.
4-year-olds are about the why then. So 4-year-olds now are, they get that external controls. They get that they have control in the environment and they want to know the why. They're trying to figure out the why. They're trying to figure out when can I control and when can I not? And that's why they ask a lot of why questions. And that's why you have to keep kind of answering them back. And then sometimes going, I don't know. Can you remember why? And helping them figure that out. So they can understand lots of questions. 4-year-olds can tell you about stuff. They may not get it in correct order and their grammar may not be correct. That 4-year-olds are famous for, well, yesterday I'm going to go to the zoo. And you're like, or, you know, last night I think I'm going to go and have a chocolate cake for my birthday. And so they mix time concept.
Yes.
That is not clear. They're still figuring that out. But their language, 4-year-olds have sweet language because when they tell you about an event, it can be about 3 different events all mushed into one. And it doesn't matter because all of that amazing language they have is fully on display.
That's such a great way to wrap up this conversation to go into our next episode. I know that we've had so much fun hearing about the details of language development, which is a marvel in itself. And in the next episodes, we're going to really talk about some of those concerns that might arise. What do we do about that? How can we support some challenges that might occur, some issues or delays? And Cindy McEnroy, speech pathologist or speech and language therapist, excuse me.
That's okay.
Thank
it's
you
right.
so much for being on Inclusion Matters. And for those of you who are listening, we are going to continue to add to this series. And you can go to inclusivechildcare.org, our website, if you want more information on language development and some of the other resources that Cindy shared, the CDC, Help Me Grow, all of those things are really available. And we also have developmental brochures on our website that are available too, that talk about what to expect and when to be concerned. And so all of these things are covered in those mm-hmm. as well. So Cindy, I look forward to having our continued conversation in our next episode.
Yeah, wonderful. Look forward to talking soon. Thanks all.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.